Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World According to Velvet. This is Velvet and Robert Fitzgerald, theoretical astrologer, and we're reporting here live from planet Earth, conjunct the center of the galaxy. So last week we started talking about gender roles in astrology, and today we're going to continue on that topic. We're going to continue to speak about the astrological roots of gender roles, and we're also going to talk a little bit about archetypes versus stereotypes. So I'm just going to hand it over to Robert, because really, in this show, he does most of the talking.
Thank you, Velvet. Okay, last time we went into the journey, the hero's journey, and the importance of the heroine in that journey, which gives us an understanding of the importance of a masculine-feminine balance in anything and everything that we do. Also, in terms of like the nature, the essential requirement that relationships be balanced with respect and equality from both sides. Okay, now we're going to get into today the qualities that make up the female, the feminine gender role, and the masculine gender role. Now, before we get into this, let's remember, these are archetypal qualities. They're not meant to be applied to men and women across the board. Women are not all supposed to be feminine. Men are not all supposed to be masculine in that sense. One of the reasons being is everybody has their own personal chart. There's going to be a lot of women out there who are Leos, who have a lot of stuff going on in their fifth house, aspects to that, powerful planets in their fifth house or in Leo. They're going to manifest a more masculine, archetypal masculine expression in their lives. Men are going to be doing the same thing with a lot of, say, like Cancer or fourth house types of connections in their lives. So each and every person is going to approach the understanding of archetypal masculine and feminine gender and gender roles from their own perspective. Nature is extremely varied in how it does things, and it doesn't like just black and white. It loves the combination of black and white, then, is the rainbow of colors. It's not gray. It's a vast, wide variety of different colors between the black and the white poles. So with that in mind, first, let's start off with the Cancer Moon archetype. And I bring those two together because the Moon rules Cancer. Feminine religions tend to all be lunar religions, worshiping the Moon and the nature of the Moon, her three-phase essence, new moon, waxing moon, full moon, and then you go back down to the waning moon and around the cycle. So with Cancer, the feminine archetypal qualities are the mother, motherhood, family, community, defensiveness and protectiveness, it's nurturing, domestication, food, agriculture, house building, ancestors, and things dealing with the land, boundaries, and all foundations. Related to the moon, it's emotions, feelings, the dark and the night, the subconscious mind. It rules the deep or the depth of mystery and the unknown. It is the realm of power. Power is deep and dark, and it just it goes beyond rational understanding. Now, in all of this, the feminine, as we find, and this strews most of the women I've talked to, is that women tend to feel life. It's emotional. It's how they interact. Life is all about interaction, and in that sense, then, a life for the feminine archetype is about relationship, interaction, embrace, nurturing, and family and community. Okay? Now, the Leo archetype has to do with the Leo Sun archetype is rulership and kingship, aristocracy, the will, which is an aspect of the ego, the love of fighting, glory, the warrior, spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, creativity, children and youth. And interestingly enough, Leo rules romance, not Cancer, and love affairs. It rules loyalty. The sun shines the light of reason into the mystery of the dark. It's radiance. It's the known, generosity. In this sense, the masculine is strength, opposing or in dance with the power of the feminine. Now, ideally, in terms of creation, the masculine and feminine were created as polar opposites, but not necessarily opposites, polar dance partners to each other. One way I like to look at it is that the power of the feminine can just explode out in all directions. And as it goes out in all directions, the farther it goes, the more dissipated it becomes. Also, within closed spaces, that power can be destructive. What the masculine brings to the feminine is strength and focus, so that the masculine is supposed to be able to delve into, and this is can be seen as a sexual image, the masculine penetrates the feminine, brings the light of the sun into the arena of the dark mystery and power of the moon, and enlightens. And the two together, the strength of the masculine takes the power of the feminine and focuses it. And once you have that focus, you have the potential for vast areas of creation. Okay? Now, strength without power is just a show of muscle building. It goes nowhere. It can't accomplish. So the two have to work together. Now, one of the things that we find that in matriarchal cultures, the feminine was highly created. The feminine, well, let's look at it this way. Cancer rules the mother. The mother is an image of maturity and authority in a very nurturing and egalitarian way. Leo, the son, although it rules kingship, is not the image of the father. It's the image of children and youth, implying impetuosity. It's the Leo archetype is not mature at all. It's just the masculine process of going out there, the joy of fighting against whatever challenges there are, the joy, the glory of overcoming things, of creating your little empire. And it's the idea of, it's almost like the idea of like your teenage, a mother's teenage son going, I did this, I scored 15 touchdowns. Very virile. But again, it's not mature. It's not constructive in a more grown-up way. Okay, it's the youth. So we have to understand that, in this sense, our current social structure with men at the top quite often leads us into war and conquest and other areas that aren't really socially constructive. It's one of the things we find in history is that the matriarchy, it was women who settled humanity down after about 9,000 BC, the age of Cancer, into settled villages and small communities in different places around the world. Thousands of years later, after about 4,000 BC, It was women who started the process of growing those villages in the age of Taurus. Taurus rules monumentality. So we started getting villages that were starting to grow into large cities. And with that, we ended up creating the beginnings of civilization. This was part of the feminine archetype. It was that Cancer family, and the larger family, the community, and the larger community, the city-state or the nation-state, that was expressing a sense of being internally nurtured and domesticated and building houses and larger houses and temples and things like that, and all within safe boundaries, you know, the city limits, so to speak, creating a complex, a socially complex and vibrant communal organization that we call civilization. Now, 2,000 years later, then we started to get the rise of the masculine in patriarchies. What the masculine did when they started to take over was immediately they started to change civilization into empire, which is based on conquest, war, military aristocracies, kingship, as opposed to government and heads of state. In this, let's say that the idea of the community, with the Capricorn opposite to Cancer, Capricorn rules government and heads of state. Now, governing has a feminine connotation to it, which is networking, working with other people, deciding what is good for the city-state or the nation-state, whatever it is, and implementing programs to help in what might be considered a socialistic way to help society grow and evolve and expand creatively. The empire, the Leo quality of rulership and kingship, had to do with a, it was much more monarchical or totalitarian in some states, in some instances. One man, the warrior king, ruled everything by proclamation. He had a warrior aristocracy under him that submitted to his will in exchange for their status as an aristocracy within the social hierarchy. And there was very little opportunity or process for dealing with questions and issues that the populace may or may not have had. Okay, so this is where we start to see that the potential for the archetypes then is based in this. One of the processes where we bring the two together is that the, in addition to power and strength, okay, the dark feeling tone of the feminine can be enlivened by the light and reason of the masculine, and the two together then can create a much more coherent culture based upon the depth of the feminine that has been enlivened or enlightened with the light and reason of the masculine, but it has to be done without a sense of dominance by one over the other. Okay, now, in matriarchal times, women were in charge of the community, the city-state, even the nation-state. They were in charge of that because it fit their archetype. Women were what we might call business leaders, not necessarily in terms of corporation, but women who knew how to bake could do their baking and exchange that for other women who and men who were out in their fields, and it was a barter system up until about 4000 BC. Then with the creation of money, which again was well into the matriarchy, so women started to create this idea of like, money is it was a form of credit, but it wasn't. It was a form of credit that you didn't put in the ledgers. you carried it within you with, say, cowrie shells or the first copper coinage created, and you could exchange that coin for something, and that was the credit. So it was barter taken to a whole nother level, and a lot of it was still very socialistic at that time. Even when you created banking and loans and interest rates, et cetera, everybody in the culture, in that city-state or in that village or in that the growth to the to a nation-state was taken care of. There was no poverty. There were people who would say, like, if they had no skills in that sense, perhaps they would have bartered their own work skills in what might be considered, say, a slave type of situation, but it was, at that time, I think a lot of it was just their own choice, and they worked certain things off, and then they went about their business. But community, all the way up, was and still is a feminine archetypal quality, okay? Women belong in the community. It's better for women to run the community because of their nurturing and egalitarian nature than it is for men to run the community, because community is not Leo, or is it solar? On the other hand, Leo, the love of fighting, glory the warrior, omniscience, omnipotence, when patriarchy took over from matriarchy after about 2000 BC, especially in the Near East and other places, there were matriarchal cultures that got smaller and smaller and maintained their own independence for several thousand years after that. But the vast spread of the Aries Age change was more patriarchal. So what they did was they pushed the feminine out of the community. They pushed the feminine out of their own community and into the home. Okay, which was became a much smaller environment, more tighter boundaries to keep women in check. Now,
barefoot
and pregnant. Yes, the idea was that, like, as women control the process of new life, childbirth, carrying a child and birthing it, relating to their own menstrual cycles, etc., men decided they needed to take that over as signs of their own power. Power belonged with the feminine. So men decided they needed to emulate those feminine things in order to validate their declaration that they had the new power now. Men, priests would dress up in women's clothing, and that's why you still have the long robes for male priests. And interestingly enough, a lot of these male priests or even kings, they would castrate themselves in order to show genitally a smooth vaginal-like appearance so that the goddess would smile on them and give to him her power. A lot of this stuff during the transition from about 2500 BC to 2000 BC was during the age of Taurus with the Scorpio opposite involved. Taurus loves to make things solid and physical and permanent. So therefore, men had to look feminine in order at that time, you know, during the transition, in order to trick the goddess into thinking that they were more feminine than they actually were. The Scorpio need for blood sacrifice. It changed the process where feminine menstrual blood for sprinkling around the fields each springtime in order to fructify the fields then became masculine sacrificial blood.
Okay.
Well, the king would be killed every so often. He would be could be castrated, and the blood from that castration. That's where we carry also the, you know, cutting off before, I forget the, oh God. Circumcision as a form of castration. so that a young boy could show that he bleeds from his genitals the same way a girl does when she hits her first menarche. Okay, so a lot of this had to do with feminine blood and showing that that man could bleed the same way and not die. One of the processes we have here is that, like, the warrior quality of Leo, the love of the fight, and his strength, they translated stereotypically into dominance. The male needed to dominate the female. Okay, and that became like a whole 4,000-year process of masculine dominance over the feminine, and feminine becoming second-class citizens and worthless and just vehicles for a man's child. It's no longer a woman's child in these patriarchal cultures. Everything that we were still even dealing with today in our culture, where there is a lot of equality that has been achieved over the last 150 years by women. Okay, as we seek to counter this, we need to allow the feminine back out into the community. This means voting more women in politics because of her connection with the cancer opposite quality of government, heads of state, civic responsibility, and everything else. It does not necessarily negate the masculine quality of kingship. There's perhaps different ways of dealing with that, but we need to allow the feminine to root into positions of, back into positions of rulership in equal balance with the masculine. This also means that, like, we need to allow the feminine back into the business community. Capitalism is highly masculine, individual, fighting against each other, creating financial empires, as opposed to creating a new type of, say, socialism. Not necessarily where socialism, you know, it's like, you know, where government controls all of the businesses, but say a socialistic capitalism or something where there's a balance between masculine and feminine, where we allow more feminine female CEOs to bring their sense of nurturing and understanding, their sense of egalitarian networking and bringing together the business community, both here in the West as well as working with farmers and people in the third world, not only to bring up, you know, get resources from them, but to actually help them to grow as well. It has to go both ways. Now, in the relationship, what we find interesting is that romance is ruled by Leo, not by Cancer. So this means that this shocked me when I read this first, and I thought it was like because women love romance. Well, in the Cancer Moon sense, they're not after romance; they're after expressions of emotional depth. That's the Moon in Cancer, the nurturing aspect of lunar emotional depth. Now, if we think in terms that men are designed by God, by Goddess, to meet the woman, the feminine, halfway as a creative force, then it's up to men to get past their warrior ideals of heroism, you know, battle, you know, sword and shield heroism, and turn that heroism into, or tie it with romantic. Romance is up to a man to romance a woman 24/7 for the rest of his life, as long as they're together. And what that does then is that helps to bring up the emotional power of the feminine so that between the two of them, his light can enliven her mystery. And then they become they potentially become an extremely powerful creative unit within culture, within society, for family, for community, and for the man, for his own brilliance and radiance to shine forth, but the two have to be balanced together. Okay? the love affair of the masculine is with his partner. It's not just out there trying to, like, score all the time, which is a stereotype placed over the top of the archetype. Masculine dominance over the feminine is a stereotype placed over the archetype. Okay? The idea that the woman belongs in the family, in the home, having babies, because that's the only place she can feel happy in this archetypal expression, is a stereotype placed over the archetype. And what we need to do is what we're doing now, and as I read out there on, you know, in the checkout with the news, is we have to combat these stereotypes in order to expose the archetypes. And once we've done that, then we need to get into an open up to the idea of dialogue. Because what I've just said, that's just my interpretation of it. Everybody's going to see something different. But we have to get back down to the archetypes before we can all be dialoguing and arguing with each other what the heck this means, and what the heck this means on a collective level, as well as what the heck it means personally for me, for you, for anybody else. Okay? One other thing, too, that's like the masculine rules, which is loyalty. Now, one of the stereotypes that the masculine has placed over it, over the archetype, is that women need to remain loyal to the masculine while the masculine can go out and screw as many women as he wants. That's a stereotype. It's not the archetype. Now, the archetype is that if a man, he expects loyalty from his partner, he needs to be loyal to her. Now, if a woman, he expects a woman to be nurturing to him, well, if he wants nurturing from his woman, which is a feminine archetype, he needs to nurture her, all tied back into romance, tied back in through the nurturing of the feminine. So, again, it's just like once a man corners a woman and gets her to marry him, that's when the romance really starts. It goes to a deeper level. It's not just the courtship romance anymore, but it has to go to a deeper level because he has to keep courting the feminine constantly in order to bring up her heart. And when he brings up her heart, that's when the power of her creative potential comes up. Otherwise, she shuts down, and things just start to fall apart. He has to work his ass off to get by, and nothing seems to work. The potential seems to be that with this type of heroic romance, loyalty, all this other stuff, looking at the feminine not as an enemy, but as the dance partner, as this great mind field, this great cavern of potential. He has to go in and pick it out, and she will give it to him as long as he romances her. Otherwise, it becomes extremely, extremely difficult to do that. I'm going to have to leave that here for right now because we're coming to the end. But this is something we can start to, you know, talk about a little bit more next time. And go forth and, you know, embrace each other. Have a good time.
Do the tango, do the rumba, do the, what is that? Country and Western line dance. Do whatever kind of dance you want. Just dance with your partner. Just dance, have your inner masculine and your inner feminine dance internally, and then you will bring the same dance into your life. This is Velvet from The World According to Velvet. I'm kind of tongue-tied. I was just still processing everything that Robert has been talking about. That's great, Robert. We're going to have a little bit of a break in between now and the next time we have our radio show with Robert, because I'm going off to Ireland to see if I can kiss the Blarney Stone and talk to any leprechauns and see the place, one of the last places in the Western world where a king went through the pagan feminine rites of kingship. So we're going to say goodbye, Robert. Thanks for being here. Thanks to all the listeners, and keep it shiny side up. Adieu. Bye-bye.